The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
I'll be honest with you, it's been a long couple of weeks as we push through the football season. I was dragging ass a little bit this morning, kind of tired. Just watched the James Bond trailer. I'm awake now. I'm ready to go. I am excited to be hosting the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and final Daniel Craig James Bond movie, and they know how to market those. So ready to go. Busy show to get to. We're going to have a segment that Brad did a couple days ago with Chili, with Ralph Amsden over at Arizona Varsity, talking about the high school football playoffs that's going to be going on in a little bit here. Just breaking down the open division, the rest of the state championship games. Busy week for high school, obviously, as we are going through 2 weeks of state championship games. 3A already happened, 2A, 4A, 5A, 6A, and, of course, the open division this weekend. So a lot going on. ASU Territorial Cup win. ASU basketball gets another win on the road. So a lot to get to here. We're going to kick it off with our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And I think right now, when you look at the big story from last night, I think it's ASU, a late game win, a late tip-off against San Francisco, a good San Francisco team. And remember, last year, these two teams were going to go head-to-head, two teams that we thought could be, potentially players in the tournament, but due to the fires and air quality up there, that game never happened. But this game did happen. San Francisco, an underrated WCC team. ASU pulled this one out 71-67. Remy Martin led the way with 14 points, as well as Romello White. Tayshawn Cherry played pretty well. Jalen Graham played pretty well. And this is a team, it's interesting because you have the guys the past couple of years that you knew could just take over a game. And just be that guy consistently. Last year, it was Lou Dort, Zylan Cheatham, Remy Martin would get in the mix. Remy's the only one back this year. And I think Remy's at his best when he is getting other guys involved. So I don't know how often you're going to see those 25-plus point games from him where he just takes over. There have been certainly scenarios where they've needed a bucket. He's been able to take care of business with that. But I feel like this team is going to – we're going to see a lot of stat lines where it's just kind of spread out. The points are spread out, the rebounds. This seems like a deeper team that Bobby Hurley has had in recent years. But I don't know who that go-to guy is quite yet. Jalen House has been very impressive as a freshman, and I can already tell just Pac-12 opponents and Pac-12 opponent fan bases are going to hate Jalen House just with the way he plays, the passion that he plays. He is just a guy, especially on defense, he's just like that fly, that mosquito that just you can't quite get away from, that just continues to pick and just get under your skin. Frankly, a lot kind of like how his dad played back in the day. So I think that this roster is set up to be a player in the Pac-12, maybe not compete for the Pac-12 championship, but they're going to be in there. And wouldn't you know, right as I'm making this case and talked about a fly and a mosquito, I watched a fly just fly right across the front of me. But sorry, ADD kicked in there for a second. U of A has a very good team. Washington has a very good team. But I think that ASU is going to be able to compete. And Bobby Hurley continues to impress in the non-con, and especially on the road. This team has not played many games in Tempe this year. And they're about to go on a pretty long stretch where they will be in the state of Arizona, whether that is in Tempe or in Phoenix, playing St. Mary's, another very good WCC team. But this, I'm looking forward to see how this team develops and what identity this team takes on. Romello White has been a big part of what they've been able to do. They went from guard U, where it's like they had next to no big men. Now one of their featured players is going to be a big man. a big man, and it's Romello White and Tayshaun Sherry's get involved, and Kamani Lawrence. So we'll see how they are able to navigate that over the next couple of weeks. With the Arizona Diamondbacks, obviously they are in the offseason, but a lot of news happening. They signed Steven Vogt. Last week, they chose not to tender the contracts of Taijuan Walker, of Caleb Joseph, and just some other really big key players here on this team. Let's start with Taijuan. I think that the depth is kind of where they really were able to look at that and say, okay, we'll move on from them. But you look at the rotation, and I said this at the start of the offseason, and I think it still rings true. You have Robbie Ray, Merrill Kelly, Alex Young, Luke Weaver, Mike Leake, Zach Gallen. So six options there. Taijuan Walker has had his injuries have prolonged, I think, a lot longer than people anticipated. I was still expecting Taijuan Walker to be in the mix for this because he's one of the more established pitchers at the major league level for this rotation. When you look at Merrill Kelly, Young, Zach Gallen, a lot of these guys haven't thrown much at the major league level. Zach Gallen's been very effective. I think Young has surprised a lot of people. Merrill Kelly, in his first year since coming over from international ball, has really impressed a lot of people. There are a lot of really good options for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but I think that move still tells me that Mike Hazen is looking to potentially add an ace, to add a top-of-the-line starter, because there are still a lot of questions with Luke Weaver and his health. How effective is Mike Leake going to be as he continues to go through his career? And he's kind of the wise one of this group, the vet of this group, and I think he'll have an important part in this rotation. But if he's not effective, where do you go? Robbie Ray, I have said, if you have a rotation where Robbie Ray is your number two pitcher, you have a pretty darn good rotation. If you have him as the number one, I'm not quite sure. And we've seen Robbie Ray at his best in 2017, where he is just lights out. And it's been kind of up and down since then. I think he's still an effective pitcher, but is he the one that you want to walk out opening day and day one? When you're going up against their number one pitcher, the opponent's number one pitcher, who's it going to be? Who's going to be the guy that steps up in that role? And of course, now we get to Steven Souza Jr., who also had his contract not picked up. This tells me, obviously, the Diamondbacks are in the outfield market. And I think that also means whether that's center field, whether that's right field, they're definitely going to need a corner outfielder. But I don't think that necessarily tells you Ketel Marte is going to be playing center field from the get-go. Not necessarily. It's starting to point that way, but I don't think that necessarily is chalk that up. They did tender the contract of Jake Lamb, which means he's sticking around, will be a corner infielder for this team. Again, another tough injury season for him. I think he can definitely add some depth to the first base side, but you have Christian Walker and potentially Kevin Crone. At third base, you have Escobar kind of leading the way, but you could have an infield. I think the most senior infield you'll see is if it's Christian Walker potentially at first base, Eduardo Escobar second base, Nick Ahmed shortstop, Jake Lamb third. And you can kind of swap out Walker and Lamb and move some things around. And that's what the Diamondbacks like. They like having that versatility. I think that starts to give you a tell of some of the things that they're looking at. I don't think that any of these minor league players that they added are quite there yet. But I think that, they do have some good depth guys. Now it's going to be who's going to be the starting right fielder. Who's going to be in that rotation, replacing Taijuan Walker's spot potentially. I think the writing was kind of on the wall for Caleb Joseph when you added Steven Vogt. Carson Kelly, when Steven Vogt got signed in the conference call with Mike Hazen, he kind of said Carson Kelly's going to be the guy. Vogt is a left-handed bat, will provide depth, can also play some first base, can also play some outfield. I really like this signing a lot. I think that it is a strong veteran guy, a strong clubhouse guy. And look, Carson Kelly is still a young catcher. He's learned from some of the best. When you think of Yadi Molina and some of the veterans on this team last year that he was able to learn from, that this is just another one that he can continue to get perspective from. And, you know, by all accounts, everything I've heard from the writers that covered Stephen Vogt in the Bay Area just said, he is the guy that, you know, in the clubhouse just makes things run smoothly. So I think that these moves are, you know, starting to come in. We are roughly a week away from winter meetings. And Mike Hazen even kind of pointed, like, things are going to heat up when we get to winter meetings. He doesn't anticipate it to be as slow as it's been the past two off seasons with just adding players. So I think that a lot of moves are going to start to happen, and I think some trades could come the Diamondbacks' way. I was looking at ESPN, and they said, you know, 30 or one blockbuster move for all 30 MLB teams, and what it said for the Arizona Diamondbacks was trading Robbie Ray for Clint Frazier, the Yankees outfielder, and that's something that got kicked around on deadline day. The reports were Mike Hazen asked not only for Clint Frazier, but a bunch of other top prospects. And they said, you're insane. But he was kind of the one in control there. So he was going to take a big swing. I'd be intrigued by that deal. Clint Frazier was a top prospect with the Indians, a top prospect with the Yankees, has had some time up at the big league level, a good young power bat. I think he was overhyped, and that's not his fault. But it's certainly an interesting route to go if you're the Arizona Diamondbacks. I would assume a corresponding move would happen with that rotation to continue to strengthen it up and bring that in. But it's I'm really hoping that this offseason doesn't even have to be a hot stove, just not an igloo, what it's been the past couple of years. And we've seen Mike Hazen have to get creative, not only because of what the team's financials were, but the slow market. And he's been incredibly effective with that. Now, he can still have that creativity, but it's not a necessity. He has some money to work with for the first time in his tenure as the Diamondbacks general manager. He has, I think that overall just the market's going to pick up a little bit. So we're going to see that creativity, but we're also going to see them have more resources than they've ever had after trading Zach Greinke. And I'm really excited to see how this Diamondbacks team takes shape in the offseason. As a person that covers them and talks about them, there's going to be plenty to talk about with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals now, as well as some ASU football, just looking ahead at the bowl game and what the Cardinals can do to kind of right the ship, the future of certain people in that organization. Also, a mock draft came out. Who did they take in the top 10? That's all coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussman Show. I'm Jordan Hamm in on hosting duties. Devin Henry on the other side of the glass, the Swiss Army knife of Sports 360 AZ. Wanted to talk some Cardinals, some ASU football here in the next few segments, and just kind of looking at where the Cardinals are at. Obviously came off that bye week like the Walking Dead, and the Rams took advantage of them. A Rams team that was struggling mightily, 34-7 win, and that just kind of it felt like it was done before it even got going. Cardinals now at home the next 2 weeks against the Steelers, against the Browns, I think two winnable games. Look, with the Steelers, you have a third-string quarterback going against them, and the defense has been bad for the Arizona Cardinals, but you keep them somewhat in check, you let the offense do their thing, and you can get away with a victory, and I think all of a sudden people might be off the Cardinals back a little bit, because look, I think the final 2 weeks of this season, the Seahawks and the Rams, you're going to have a tough time winning those games. Maybe you could sneak one from the Rams. I don't see that happening against the Seahawks, but you escape with, let's say, a 5-win season. Where's everybody kind of at with where this franchise is currently? The improvements obviously are there on the offensive side of the ball, and there that was the expectation with Cliff Kingsbury, with Kyler Murray. The defense is concerning. I don't think that Vance Joseph will be back. There are now names out there. Brad Sussman put out his High Five podcast of just 5 minutes, kind of on where the Cardinals are at. He's talking about replacements for Steve Keim, replacements for Vance Joseph. Obviously, Ron Rivera is a name that everybody's ears kind of perked up when they heard, you know, he was moved or he got let go by the Carolina Panthers. Could he be an option for the Arizona Cardinals? Potentially. You know, that I think that that's something that they could certainly look into as, but this team clearly wasn't prepared coming off the bye week. And I don't know if that is a new coaching deal or just a young team in general. But as I've said before, I think Steve Keim tried to buy himself some time with this Cliff Kingsbury hiring, because this, in my mind, this is like a politician trying to get reelected, saying, look, in this time, in this last year, when we got Cliff Kingsbury in here, we are trying to rebuild something. We knew it wasn't going to take, you know, it wasn't going to take 1 year to get everything in place. But in this second term, let me go ahead and get the real work done. I laid the groundwork. Now let me go get the real work done. So I think that's the argument for Steve Keim, that they can go ahead and push through this and try to build themselves back up in the NFC West, or has all that goodwill that they had in the Bruce Arians era, has all of that started to dry up? And because that was the thing, I think that they had so much of that goodwill built up because they were so successful together right off the bat, Bruce Arians and Steve Keim. So now it was, all right, you missed on a first rounder. Okay, that happened. But hey, you grabbed Tyrann Mathieu in the third round. You grabbed David Johnson in the third round. You were able to build this roster. You had those one-year contracts for, it seemed like, a linebacker every year, where they would come in and be towards the top on the team in tackles and leadership and, you know, the Carlos Dansbys of the world. It seemed like every year they were also bringing in a Pittsburgh Steeler that was coming in and having an impact specifically on the defense. But I don't know if that's there anymore. I don't think it is. So it's going to be a tough decision moving forward. I can see where Steve Keim can make that argument. And I think it's got to be a contingency of, if they do move on from Steve Keim, this GM can't pick his guy as a head coach, because Cliff Kingsbury is in there. We've seen the progress with the offense. Obviously, has been far from perfect, but we've seen the progress. And Cliff Kingsbury paired with Kyler Murray is probably more effective than most offensive minds. And the interesting thing is that so many teams copied this model of the Los Angeles Rams, of follow the Sean McVay type. And now the Rams are struggling. It was really just one or two really good years for the Rams. Now they're a 500 football team. And again, this could just be 1 year. But it was, this is the new NFL. This is what's happening. And we're going to follow this path that the Rams took, where it was just like, it felt like whatever head coach, you know, position was coming available, it was like, well, Sean McVay looked at this guy one time, so like, we're going to hire him, because clearly there's some offensive prowess if Sean McVay made eye contact with a human being. And now that's just how the NFL goes and how quickly it has evolved. So Cardinals, I think they're taking steps in the right direction. Clearly not there yet, and we'll see kind of where they go from here. The Athletic put out Dane Brugler, who does a great job for The Athletic, on the draft, put out his first mock draft. And yes, it is December. Yes, I'm looking at mock drafts. I am the type of person that will click on anything that says mock draft, probably question most of the decisions, but I will still click and I will still read it. Number 7, Arizona Cardinals, Tristan Wirfs, the offensive tackle from Iowa. Dane wrote was, with a pair of tight ends drafted in the first round last year, Iowa did something never before done in the NFL. Yet the program has never produced multiple top 10 draft picks. Although this has been this has a chance to change in April. Wirfs rarely loses his balance and stays sound with his hand tactics to handle edge rushers. As we've said, there are a lot of holes on this football team, and I think the wide receiver room is better, but you have to consider when Larry Fitzgerald is going to move on, who is going to take over as that number one. Is it going to be Christian Kirk, or do you want it to be a 1A, 1B? I've said on this very show before, you don't want to follow the heirs of the Indianapolis Colts from a few years ago, where it's, you have your franchise quarterback, let's go get all the skill position guys and not address the offensive line, when clearly this Arizona Cardinals offensive line needs help. They need a solid They need solid tackles at both positions, frankly. And going the free agency route probably just isn't going to happen. You're either going to overpay or have to get a guy with an injury history, as we've seen them do time and time again. I think they got really lucky with how the Jared Valdir signing went a few years ago for the first couple of years, and Mikey Potty. But that is just, it's such a gamble. So the draft is the way to go. I am, unless there is a game-changing wide receiver here, and he actually has Jerry Jeudy quite a bit lower than what I've seen. And again, it's December. I fully realize that. They have Jerry Jeudy going at 16. He's probably like one of the few wide receivers that will for sure be out in the draft that I would even consider. But I think you have to go offensive line. You need to protect Kyler Murray. Don't do what the Colts did and try to get all the skill positions guys around Andrew Luck while Andrew Luck is getting pummeled and destroyed, and you refuse to address that offensive line, and really on both sides of the football, in the trenches, and you waste a talent like Andrew Luck or Kyler Murray. Protect this guy, invest in this guy. The offensive line, I feel like, is the way to go, and this is a very good year for that, to take someone early with that. There's a lot of depth in wide receiver based on everything I've read. You're going to have, what, probably the 39th pick in the second round? Maybe you can go wide receiver there. One other name that caught my eye at number 15, Cleveland Browns, Austin Jackson, former North Canyon offensive tackle, is currently at USC, has been along that offensive line for a very long time. He is a first-round draft pick in this mock draft, and pretty cool to see. Obviously, a lot of people know about Austin, not only just coming up. A lot of people wanted him to transfer elsewhere and play at big programs. He still got recruited, him and Solomon Enos, who's currently with Utah. Both of these guys got recruited. Austin certainly has a chance to be a first-round draft pick. And if you follow college football, you've probably seen the story of him, you know, giving donations to his sister, who is, you know, in need of a lot of medical attention, and him being able to do that got a lot of national attention. And so a great dude on the field, off the field, have known him for a long time. Pretty cool to see his name coming up. Coming up next, we will talk now some ASU football recruiting, figuring out where they're going to go in their bowl game, coaching changes, a lot going on. We'll talk some Sun Devil football coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussman Show. I am Jordan Hamm, talking some Sun Devil football now. End of the year, it always feels like it's like, okay, we're going to take a breath now. No, it's now recruiting, coaching changes, where are they going to play in the bowl game? Listen, first things first, I mean, it's a very good thing for this program that they have that bowl game. So many young players, you now have an extra month of practice with them. I would imagine they'll go the same route with spring ball and play it, probably do it maybe not as early as it was this past year, where it was like late signing day and they were already done, or like on the verge of being done, or like just getting started, like something crazy like that. But I think that they like keeping the guys kind of engaged throughout. But with the recruiting side of things, it's interesting how they're using these coaching changes and putting people in interim positions so they can go out and recruit. Kevin Mawai, NFL Hall of Famer, if you've heard him speak about the Sun Devil program for about 2 minutes, you're ready to run through a wall for him. Since he is coaching the tight ends in the bowl game, he can go out and recruit. Now, if he's an offensive analyst, he's not able to do that. I think it's very wise that they went ahead and do that same thing with Derek Hagan. Hagan serving as a wide receivers coach for the bowl game, he can now go out and recruit. Both of them have really hit the road hard. And Sean Aguano in Louisiana. Look, I think it's pretty clear, and Chris Cartman wrote a very good article yesterday on Sun Devil Source regarding what the Sun Devils need to do to, you know, get their signing class across the finish line in early signing day, and get pretty much focus on the wide receivers So Jaden Daniels has the weapons he needs to go out and, you know, take care of business. There are five guys that they're targeting right now, some of them as high as Gary Bryant Jr., who's an All-American that I'm looking forward to checking out. Saw him at the opening. Very good. Kind of a smaller slot guy, but, like, does so much with the football and is very strong in a jump ball, like tearing the ball away. But there are four or five names that they're targeting. You have Daniel Nada, the running back, the number one all-purpose back. And then Corey Wren, also a once Georgia commit, decommitted last night. So they have quite a few, I think, options there where you can mix and match what's going on with these with all of these players to make sure that Jaden Daniels is properly surrounded. But the other thing of note that needs to be addressed as well is the offensive line. We've talked so much about the youth along the offensive line. Guess what? There are quite a few seniors leaving. This might actually be a younger offensive line this time next year. So I know that they're one thing Chris told Brad was they are looking at the transfer portal, try to get some guys in there. I think they found some success with Casey Tucker a few years ago. They want to go that same route. I know there's an Texas A&M offensive lineman that Dave Christensen recruited when he was over there under Kevin Sumlin, and they got that commitment. He never has been able to crack through in the starting lineup. A highly regarded recruit. Maybe this could be a landing spot for him. But it's going to be it's like we were talking about last segment, the free agent offensive linemen and, you know, tackles, those guys are free agents for a reason, whether it's injury history or underperforming, or you're just going to be priced out by those guys. It's kind of the same deal with the transfer portal for offensive linemen. Like the really good ones who are playing probably are going to stay put. But the next group of guys, so it's not going to be the elite guys, but maybe guys that can thrive in a change of scenery. So a lot going on with the Sun Devil football team. Once again, no matter the destination, I think this is a very good thing for the Sun Devil football team to continue to get this practice time. It is so, so valuable as they're spending time recruiting. Also able to, you know, figure out what's going on with their coaching staff. Prentice Gill was just added as an offensive analyst, or he was a former offensive analyst, I should say. His role has not been determined yet. They think likely a wide receivers coach. This is another guy. They're just doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on Southern California, going after those guys to you know, get the bulk of their recruiting class out of there. And maybe if they can pick off a few Arizona guys here and there, awesome. I think that Will Schaefer, the Saguaro linebacker, he's an all-purpose guy, really, but he'll be a linebacker at the next level. He could be a Kyle Soley type on this team. He has been so good, and the Sun Devils were wise to be the first Power 5 offer. He grew up a Sun Devil. He loves Sun Devil football, and it was a no-brainer for him to commit. And then he has had a monster senior year. He's not going to be the biggest guy. He's not going to be the fastest guy, but he's a guy you want in your program. And I think same goes for Ben Bray. He's the Red Mountain offensive tackle. He's not going to be a guy that you can plug in right away and start along the offensive line, but high GPA guy. Loves ASU. You need to mix in some elite talent in state, though. That's the thing. And you look at the list of guys that are still available that are not committed yet. Keely Ringo, Damian Sellers, Jason Harris. You know, he was over at ASU. I don't think he would pull the trigger on ASU right now. I think the leader in the clubhouse is probably Colorado. Jacoby Covington, who reopened his commitment. I don't see him coming to ASU. You know, you go down the list, Tate Romney, another linebacker over at Chandler, a really good player, strong ties to BYU. A couple of his brothers are over there. And then you kind of get down to it. I think this is probably going to be the recruiting class in state for ASU. The best recruiting class to ever come out of Arizona, and they're not able to get some of these high-profile guys. Again, they got some good guys in state that I think people will look back and be very excited, like, wow, like they really grew into something. But the elite of the elite, I don't think will will pull the trigger on ASU. And I think part of that is they're still getting the groundwork done. They've put a heavy focus on 2022 for these in-state guys. And maybe that's where they make their progress. But again, this is the best, far and away, the best in-state class ever. And to only get two, maybe three commits out of that, that's a tough deal. But they're killing it in Southern California. That's clearly where they're looking. I just think it's important to continue to have those relationships with the in-state coaches as well. And, walk that tightrope. It's not easy, but you got to walk that tightrope. And maybe Sean Aguano's inroads can help with that as well. Coming up next, more high school football talk. Brad talking to Ralph, talking to Chili from Arizona Varsity, previewing the big weekend of state championships. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show.
Chandler Saguaro, you see it, brought to you by the good people at Ortho Arizona. We appreciate Ortho Arizona throughout the playoff run. The Open Division bracket final is now set. And because it is set, it is time to bring in Ralph and Chili. Ralph Amsden and Chili with Arizona Varsity, arizonavarsity.com. Great content from these two. All right, both you guys cannot be surprised by this. Ralph's the Chandler apologist. Chili didn't want to offend Saguaro, I don't think. So you guys aren't surprised by this, are you?
Not at all. I mean, I feel like we've known this since the beginning of the season. And in fact, we were on the show earlier this year, and I told you guys, Saguaro, punch their ticket. They're already in. This is the foregone conclusion. And I think this is what we expected. The two most talented teams in the state, 1 through 50, and this is it right here.
I can't say I expected it, but this is what everybody wanted. This was the point of having an open division playoff.
What do you mean nobody expected this? Not everybody expected this. This is what it was. This was destined, Ralph. You were the conspiracy theorist. You're the grassy knoll on this deal.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I felt like I had enough to go ahead and say that Saguaro was maybe in danger of not making it at all based on just the formula. I always thought that they deserved it. Chili always said that the formula, no matter what, would make sure that Saguaro got in. But I don't know. I thought that you had a really good challenge from both Sal Point and Hamilton. You easily could have seen those two teams as well. But yeah, this is what people wanted, and I'm excited about it.
Why is Ralph wrong on this one, Chili? You're shaking your head.
Because I think there was a human element to this that we just weren't aware of. I think that there was a formula. I think that there were numbers involved. But I think at the end of the day, we knew that three teams would be in there. One of them, Chandler, obviously, because they're the 6A state champion for like three out of the last 4 years. The second one, Centennial, because they just kept destroying teams in the 5A. And the third one, Saguaro, because everybody wants to see Saguaro lose. That is the biggest part of this. They want to see Saguaro take that one L on the biggest stage possible. This whole thing has been set up to see Saguaro lose. Put them up against the toughest competition in the state and try to beat them. So this whole thing was made for Saguaro. I knew that they were going to be in this from the beginning. Oh, leave them out of the first few open formula rankings. Come on, man. They couldn't be serious, and all of us could not be serious in buying into that. All it did was created a chip for Saguaro to have on their shoulder, and these guys are mad now.
Now, is Ralph one of those apologists about Chandler? Am I right on this? I mean, have you guys fought tooth and nail throughout this process off the air?
I mean, I think we've kind of gone back and forth on a few things. You know, he doesn't want to admit that Hamilton's back, and that's okay. I'm not mad at him for that. He did go to Chandler, so, you know, he has his feelings over there. He bleeds blue through and through, and, you know, he is the Chandler wolf on staff. So, you know, I mean, I can't fault him for that or be mad at him for that, but, man, Hamilton, back, just like I said. They're going to beat Centennial, just like I said. And they had that opportunity versus Saguaro. Unfortunately, something happened to Nikki Friday. But, man, Saguaro, they're the real deal. I've seen them twice already this season. And, well, two and a half times, really, because I saw some of the Hamilton game. But, man, this team is serious, a different level of serious than I've seen in the past.
Okay, so, Ralph, why is Chili blind here with Saguaro Love? What is going on with him and just not seeing anything else? He's got blinders on.
Don't answer that. Don't answer that, Ralph. Don't do it.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like Chili's actually pretty fair about Saguaro. He's not overly in love with them or anything like that. And the one thing that I appreciate about Chili is it's not always about the star power for him. It's not just Keely Ringo. It's not just Jacoby Covington. But, you know, he's really out there supporting all of the kids out there. But I think that even he knows, and even he has said that this is the best Chandler defense ever. This is quite possibly the only Chandler team that will ever go undefeated on their way to a title. And I ran into Jason Munns at the AIA Media Day, and he told me that I need to keep picking against them because that helps motivate that team. And I told him, you know what? I got you. I will.
All right, so let's focus in on Chandler and the story that's out there beneath the surface, that Day-Day Hunter is not at 100%. If Day-Day Hunter is not at 100% and not able to go or try to go and not be himself, is Chandler in trouble against Saguaro? Ralph?
Well, that's like saying, oh, my Lamborghini's in the shop, so all I have are my Ferrari and my Range Rover. They've got so many running backs out there. I mean, we went into this season thinking that Jaheim Brown Taylor was going to be that guy, maybe rush for close to 2,000 yards the way that Drake Jackson did, the way that T.J. Green did, the way that DeCarlos Brooks did. And, you know, he was banged up, so he ended up taking a back seat. Eli Sanders comes in, and he has a monster second half of the season. Nesbitt, they've got a bunch of guys. If they need to, they can pull Jeremiah Tyler off the defensive line, put him back at running back where he started, and then you have a 6'2", 250-pound running back. So they're fine. They're fine at running back. Day-Day Hunter is absolutely special, but they have just riches beyond riches at that position.
What do you think, Chili?
I think they'll be fine. I mean, Jaheim the Jet Brown Taylor, I thought that he was going to be their 2,000-yard back, just like Ralph said. Eli Sanders is phenomenal. Nesbitt, Clemente, I mean, the Caron Adams. I mean, they're loaded. They're a different type of loaded at running back, different than I've ever seen before any team in the state.
All right, let's talk about these two coaches. Here's Rick Gerritsen for the first time in a championship game. People don't know much about Rick outside of the Chandler community. Jason Munns has been a staple in the Arizona high school scene. Who has the edge here on the coaching front, Chili?
It's tough to say. It's really tough to give the edge either way. I know that this is Gerritsen's first trip as a head coach, but I mean, he's been there so many times before, and has coached a ton of different quarterbacks over at Chandler that have gone on to have success. So, like, I mean, it's tough to say that either one of these coaches really has the edge. I think where you're going to find the edge might be, you know, OCDC, whoever's doing the most homework right now. Whoever is doing the most homework right now, that's the coach and the coaching staff that's going to have the edge.
I think that Jason Munns has the edge. I think that Jason Munns has the edge because he's been there. This is the seventh time in a row that he's done this from the executive head coaching position. You know, Rick Gerritsen has been around football his entire life. He coached in the Trinity League at Servite. If you like what Chandler has done over the last 5 to 6 years, Rick Gerritsen has probably been a big part, if not the biggest part, of how that offense has run. And so, you know, you're not losing anything from going to Jason Munns to Rick Gerritsen as far as coaching ability. So you have to look at the one thing that sets them apart, and that's that this is Jason Munns' seventh straight state championship appearance.
These games, guys, usually come down to special teams, and Saguaro is really good at the kicking position. Tell me about that a little bit.
They have a kid that's going to USC. I think Parker's phenomenal. But cash is money, so it's tough to say that there's a real advantage. I think where you might see the advantage might be in some returners. So you might be able to see Denzel Burke or one of these Saguaro athletes get loose. But Gunnar Maldonado has been amazing, you know, with the return game. So I don't know. Special teams, I think, is going to be tough to find, you know. Tough to be the one that breaks it open.
I think you're right, Brad. I think that Parker Lewis is going to take away any opportunity that Gunnar Maldonado has to return anything. And Gunnar Maldonado is probably Chandler's biggest weapon outside of anything on offense. And so I think that probably gives Saguaro a little bit of an advantage.
All right, let's go down the list then. Saguaro, Chandler, who do you like to win, guys?
I'm going with Saguaro. I've said this all season long. This is the deepest, most talented Saguaro team that I've seen. And I think Chandler has a little bit more pressure on them. They're the 6A team. They're the bigger team. They're, you know, everybody's expecting that, you know, that 6A depth, that's supposed to be what crushes Saguaro. It's happened before in the past when Saguaro played Pinnacle. So, I mean, like, I think that there's a little more pressure on Chandler to have to win this game. Not having Day-Day, you know, the questions surrounding that might be a problem. You know, new head coach, that might be a little bit of an issue. But overall, I think, you know, this Saguaro team, this is what they're built for. Keely Ringo has been absolutely special, and he's adopted a new position. He doesn't even play running back by trade. He's just adopting this, holding on to this because the opportunity came. He's done something very, very special this year.
I think that betting against Saguaro and Will Schaefer and Israel Benjamin, if he's healthy, might be one of the dumbest things that I've ever done. But it was on your show that I said that Mikey Keene has the biggest burden this season in answering the questions of whether or not he can fill Jacob Conover's giant shoes. He's done that and more. He led them to their first undefeated regular season in forever, and I think that he'll have what it takes to get the job done for Chandler.
All right, down the list, Ralph, Red Mountain, Liberty. Who you have, 6A?
I really, really like Red Mountain, even though Liberty's win over Liberty in Las Vegas makes them look like they're world beaters.
Liberty special, I tell you, they're really, really different. That defense that they run, that 3-3-5 stat is absolutely crazy. But I got to go with Red Mountain. I love what Red Mountain's doing. Ty McElroy on fire against Queen Creek. Iron Borum's proved me wrong all season. I love what Red Mountain's doing. I'm going to go with Red Mountain by at least 7.
Chili 5A, Campo Verde, Williamsfield. Campo Verde, Max Ragsdale, surprise story there. Williamsfield, I think everybody's expecting Steve Campbell to roll here. Where do you go?
I'm not expecting Coach Campbell and company to roll, but, you know, I love Caden Cloud, and I love that group over there. Mason Bug's been amazing throughout the playoffs, so I really got to go with Williamsfield. I love, Campo Verde, but I think the injury to Callaway is a little bit too much, but that quarterback's been phenomenal. Give me Williamsfield by 14.
Caden Callaway was their offense in their 35-13 regular season loss, and Williamsfield got up 35-0 in that game. To me, that tells the story. We'd all be lying if we didn't say there was a little part of us rooting for Campo Verde, but Williamsfield is a very special team, and they're going to win this game.
Ralph, finish it out. 4A, Mesquite, Desert Edge.
Oh, Mesquite has about 25 players. Some of them are incredible. Andrew Morris is one of my favorite sophomores. Ty Thompson is very special. Chris Hintze's a great running back. But their season's going to come to an end at the hands of Jihad Marks and that very talented Desert Edge team.
Chili, last word.
I like Morris, one of my class of 2022 kids, and Ty Thompson, one of my favorite quarterbacks. But, you know, they got another year to try to get it done. I think Desert Edge takes this one. Steven Ortiz Jr. and company on defense. Adrian Lara, I think that they're just got too much firepower. I think Desert Edge has been waiting for this moment all season long. They knew that they were going to be here, and I think they're going to get this job done. Shout out to Coach Lucero.
Ralph Amston and Chili, Arizona Varsity. Great content that they have there. Good stuff, guys. Thanks.